called by Robert Donovan, right?
Douglas.
Robert Douglas, and Robert Douglas is from platform.sh. And with that, I'm going to hand over to you. And don't forget to leave us a comment and give us feedback afterwards. Okay, via the smartphone app. And we said that already with that.
Thank you. And hello, everybody. Thanks for joining me here today. And I just learned that we're also on Cloud 9, the front page. That's very exciting. So hello to all the people who are watching out there. Glad you could all join us. That's me. My name's Robert Douglas. I'm the Vice President of Customer Success at a company called Platform.sh. Sometimes I even wear crazy suits, but was a little bit more laid back at this event. You can find me everywhere on the internet with my name as my handle, Robert Douglas with two S's. And I'm a longtime PHP developer, but I started in Java and I even did some crazy stuff like writing ABAP for SAP integration. But I mean, to tell you the truth, I don't write code anymore. I enable smarter people than me to write code for our product and give our customers success. So what is Platform.sh and what are we talking about a bit today? I think I need to go back here. Platform.sh is at this conference because we have a deep partnership with Microsoft, which is new this year, which allows us to operate worldwide on Azure infrastructure. It's important to understand what we are. So we are a platform as a service. That means we take underlying infrastructure as a service providers, like Azure, and we provide tooling on top of them for developers to deploy applications of any kind, PHP, Node.js, Ruby, Python, onto that infrastructure, but from the point of view of a developer. So we have the goal to bring the whole thought process up a couple levels of abstraction so that when you go to deploy your application, you only have to think, what does my application need in terms of running services, in terms of storage capacity, in terms of compute capacity? So the typical questions that we would answer and help resolve would be, okay, do you need PHP runtimes or Ruby runtimes? Do you need Node.js? Do you need a MySQL software, a Postgres server? Do you need Solr? Do you need Redis? And to make these abstractions so easy that any developer on your team can make any change to any of them on a per branch environment basis so that they can easily get running on development and then eventually deployment into production with just a few lines of YAML code. So it's really from the developer's point of view, at the application level point of view, what does my application need and how can I provide that with just a few lines of code so that DevOps is basically dead, gone. Okay, so like I said, we deploy PHP, Node, Ruby, and Python applications, and it's a multi-technology clustering product, this Platform.sh, meaning I can have microservices that are based on all sorts of different runtimes. I just have to provide a little configuration file for each one that I've got, and then they can all work together, and then they've got all their storage and compute and scalability taken care of. Furthermore, Platform.sh gives you the ability to clone a running application. The entire application, including all of the running services, a complete copy of all of the data, into a new development environment, basically for every Git branch that your developers have. And it does that instantly, really, 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 really fast. So whereas it might take you, if you SSH in and say MySQL dump, it might take you an hour to get that file if you've got 50 to 100 gigabytes of data in your database. Might take you 2 hours if it's really big. It'll take us a minute or two to give you an entire clone of the entire application with everything ready to go, and I'm even going to demonstrate that at the end. So where have we had success on the market? Just so you can place us a little bit before I get into the continuous deployment bit. We started out having a specialty with Drupal sites. We run some of the largest Drupal 8 sites on the planet. But we've branched out from there, particularly in the PHP world, and PHP is still 80% of the web, but also, like I said, into other languages. So for example, we are the platform as a service behind Magento Enterprise Cloud Edition. If you go to Magento and buy Magento Enterprise Cloud Edition, the platform as a service that you run on is built and operated by us, even though their commercial offer for that product is much larger and much more comprehensive than just the platform as a service, but we're the part that's in there, somewhere there. as accurate as I can be as a laser with a laser pointer. We are also the preferred hosting cloud hosting solution for Easy Platform. So that's also a well-known dual-licensed CMS. We are the premier cloud solution for Typo3, with a nice quote from Matthias Schreiber, the CEO of the Typo3 GmbH here. We presented this solution at the recent T3Con in Munich. And as of last week, we are also the platform as a service that runs Sensio Cloud. And if you're familiar with the PHP world, you'll know that Sensio Labs produces Symfony, which is one of the revolutionary frameworks that has made PHP cool again, if it was ever cool to begin with. But Symfony is the greatest thing for PHP that has ever happened, and Sensio Cloud is the premier platform as a service offering for Symfony. So that's us on the market. Now, before I get into the OCD deployment part, and this is a framework for you to think about application deployment in the cloud, I just wanted to say one more word, and I don't have a slide for it, about our special relationship with Microsoft, and Microsoft in particular in Germany. So Microsoft Azure, as you probably all know, did a brilliant thing this last year in that they have a German sovereign cloud that's owned and operated by T-Systems. So they're the Datentreuhänder. That means that they're the, can't even translate that. They're the people who take care of the data centers in Germany for Azure, so that all legal jurisdiction for these data centers falls into German juridical purview, and Microsoft, the American company, can't possibly ever get access to the customer data in these data centers. So we're working very closely as a French company to make sure that Europeans of all kinds, not just Germans, but in particular Germans, have a complete platform as a service offering in Germany where all of the data is guaranteed to always stay in Germany and only be subject to German and European law without any possibility of any confusion around Patriot Act or Safe Harbor. And that's the partnership with Azure that we're particularly excited about and one of the big reasons why we're here today. Okay, enough of that. That's Platform SH. Now we're going to talk about a general framework to think about for deployment, which I call OCD deployment, which stands for, oh, well, first you get to see the video, because as we all know, if you spend a lot of time building something big, building something really complicated and difficult that's probably really expensive and important to your customers, that's the last thing you want to happen when you deploy. So you need a framework, they need a framework, to help prevent last-minute deployment disasters, to make sure that that big, expensive, whatever it is that you built for a web application actually deploys the way you want it to every time, okay? If they could have practiced their deployment, if they could have actually had like a staging environment, that might not have happened. So, OCD deployment stands for, I had a slide on that, did I just go past it? It stands for orchestrated, consistent, and deterministic deployment. You might have seen that. I kind of skipped over it, possibly. Okay, what is a web application? Really important that we nail that down, or we can't talk about a framework for deploying web applications. A web application is three parts. Of course, it's code. Okay? Of course, there is code involved in a web application. That's what your developers write. but it's also infrastructure. And that is, I swear to you, I visited one of the German Deutschland cloud data centers, and that's exactly what it looks like. Not really. They're probably mad at me right now for even saying that. But you need infrastructure, and the great thing about infrastructure in 2016 is that it's a really well-solved problem at the infrastructure as a service layer, meaning Azure. And finally, you need data, because let's face it, code and infrastructure don't give you a product catalog. They don't give you editorial content. They don't give you workflows that you've defined. They don't give you users. They don't give you anything in the web application. So you need data, or your application doesn't actually exist. And you need all three of those at all times in every environment that anybody wants to develop on or deploy to, or you have a broken, unholy mess and not a web application. So web application is code, infrastructure, and data. And of course, we all know that deploying a web application clearly means I do something on local, I push it off to the dev server, everybody develops on the dev server, that gets put onto the staging server where people test it and look at it, and boom, we ship it off into production, right? Sure, that is fantasy, because actually on any meaningful team, it looks more like that, probably even more complicated than that, because you've got Bob's dev and Jim's dev and Susie's dev, and then you've got actually a test server here and a CI server there and a Jenkins there, and you've got lots of environments. You end up actually making lots of copies of this web application. So cloning or copying a web application fast becomes a very useful principle, and a lot of agencies that I see struggle with this. They struggle with importing and exporting data, sanitizing that data, and provisioning services like MySQL or specific versions of a Node.js environment to match the applications that they're trying to deploy and to do it in a consistent way. So, how do I know that these are problems other than continuously visiting lots of development agencies across Europe and the United States and talking to them? I know because I read Stack Overflow and I see questions like, how do I migrate from test to environment to production? I've got these broken image links on my homepage from after migrating from a local to a live server. There's no theme or CSS after migrating to my VPS. I'm updating to PHP 5.4 and it breaks my site. Or I've got a Solr server, and how do I deal with the indexes on different environments, because basically usually an application will generate those indexes on production where the production data is, but how do I develop on that, right? Maybe I'm an e-commerce shop and I'm coming out with a new campaign for winter boots. Well, I need those boots in the database and in Solr before I can make the listings. It's complicated. Because once again, the worst things can happen at the critical moment if you don't have everything planned perfectly. And face it, we have a lot at stake, okay? Maybe not as much as these people here, but we could literally lose our jobs and break our companies if we don't deploy applications right, okay? If the site goes down on Black Friday, on Cyber Monday, and we miss the big sale, our competitor does millions, we do nothing, and we're out of business. So it really, really matters that you have an OCD deployment concept and framework for your web applications. There's my slide. Orchestrated, consistent, deterministic. So what does that all mean, and how do you get there? First, orchestrated means planned to produce a desired result. Just, you know, for contrast, the videos that I showed were undesired results. So you want to plan to produce a desired result when you're deploying. When you're talking about web applications, that means several things. And first, we have to acknowledge that in today's world, we don't actually write the code that runs a web application. We write code that describes the code that runs the web application. We've got things like Composer, NPM, pip, yarn, all these cool buzzwords about how, you know, Maven, I don't even know the coolest, latest thing in the Java or .NET world, but we package code using repositories that exist across the web with a mishmash of open source, proprietary, and custom code that we pull together, glue together, munge, and manipulate in the last moment before we go on to deployment. That's the way everything works. Everybody has something like NPM install and then Composer compile, or SAS compile. Okay, there are all of these workflow steps in anybody's development workflow process these days that become very complicated. So we've got to resolve those dependencies, also the dependencies that the runtimes have, and we've got to build our code. Then we've got to provision servers, storage, and network. That's the infrastructure as a service. Then we've got to do things like launch and configure specific services. If you need a MySQL or PostgreSQL or a SQL server, that has to be launched and configured consistently every time you do it on all of the environments so that you can test and develop and go into production very predictably. And finally, as I mentioned before, the big one is the data management. You need to be able to move large amounts of data from ostensibly your production site, sanitize it, and put it into devs and stagings for every developer across the board, and do that quickly enough and easily enough that people aren't left waiting or having to open help desk tickets to get that done for them. And that's not actually even enough. So to be really truly orchestrated in your deployment, you also need things like high availability guarantees for all services with no single point of failure, disaster recovery for all services, change management for all services, because every server that you run, every PHP or Ruby version that you run has updates. Like in the minutes that I've been giving this talk, somebody's released a new JavaScript framework, for sure, okay? These things change really fast, and you need to have a process for keeping up with that and make sure that the security problems are fixed, that the bugs are fixed across the stack throughout all of your runtime environments. And that has to happen for every developer, every test environment, as well as production. It has to be coordinated across the whole fleet. God, it's hard. So these are examples from Platform SH on how we actually do all of that. Okay, and remember, this is from the developer's point of view, and it should be simple enough that they don't have to worry about the complexity. They just have to express in the simplest form their needs in terms of what the application needs to run. We're taking it up several levels of abstraction so that the entire way of operating with the product is through lines of code like this, whereupon you can demonstrate that you need PHP 7.0 and you're going to use Composer to build your code. That's enough, in this case, to make sure that you've got everything you need to run a PHP application. You can go on and say, I need some runtime extensions. I'm going to use Redis and Image Magic, maybe XDebug. It's that easy to make sure they're there. You can also provision entire servers, like a MySQL server with 2 gigabytes of storage, a Redis server, a Solr server with 1 gigabyte of storage, with very simple lines of YAML code. And the great thing is, since this is actually code that gets stored alongside your real application code as a simple configuration file, when you push this file to Platform SH on whatever Git branch you're on, it builds the entire application with the specification for hardware and storage and everything that you've put here, and it does so in a minute or two, and then you're ready to start developing with exactly this infrastructure that you've put here. That means if my assignment as a developer is to go in and try Elasticsearch, because we've heard that's really cool and we want to see if we could use that to help our e-commerce shop, then I can put here, instead of Solr, I could put Elasticsearch there, and by pushing that to my branch on Git, I get an Elasticsearch server to play with. And that is actually a practice deployment that will work exactly the same way as it does when I go into production. So that's really cool. And finally, you can do really complicated stuff like crons or some very necessary and rudimentary web server configuration. You have build and deploy scripts that you can do. All of this goes into very clear YAML files that totally configure and control the entire application environment, including all your microservices, all your services, all your stage storage, all your network. And it works on the modern languages that I mentioned. Everything is maintained and supported by the automated aspect of Platform SH. And there are many great services and even a couple that aren't listed there, like RabbitMQ. We also do Kafka as a queue. And this is a growing list. So basically everything that you want or need for most modern web applications. Would be remiss to not give you an architecture diagram. But the main point of this architecture diagram is that there, for the larger production environments, there is a triple redundancy, meaning that any of those services that I mentioned can be run in a master, master, master configuration, like the Galera DB for MySQL, and they can scale. How many of you run web applications that need 300 CPUs and 7 terabytes of RAM? More than that? My goodness. Well, we can easily scale applications to that size, even bigger if we need to, so there's basically no upper limit on how big your application can get. All right, so that was the orchestrated part, getting it all to be there when you need it. Now, making it consistent has some subtleties in it. Consistent is acting or done in the same way over time. And what we're seeing worldwide across all technology stacks is a convergence on one consistent paradigm for deploying web applications, and that is Git push. And here's the tweet of the day, get your phones out. If you use anything other than Git push to deploy a web application, you're doing it wrong, says Robert Douglas. So, an OCD deployment will guarantee you that you always use the same tools to deploy every time on every environment, and those same tools will always be Git push. And knowing from deploying to local dev test stage, user acceptance testing, whatever, that deploying to production will work because every time you've deployed onto those other environments, you've used the same mechanisms and you have the same results. So it's like a practice, a dry run of the deployment. Okay, so that those people who were putting the ships in the water, they actually get to practice putting that ship in the water 30 times before it really counts. You can do that with web applications, and that's great. And finally, that you have consistent infrastructure, that you have a byte-to-byte copy of the entire stack, like literally the same bits and bytes on disk are going to be present every copy of the application that you have. It's very important that you test that way. Otherwise, you can't isolate your test failures to not include differences between runtime variables, runtime environments, capacity issues, and things like that. And finally, that you have, like I mentioned, real data. Because if you're doing that boot sale for winter, you need the collection in the shop to be on your development server, or you can't test whether or not the boots look right. Finally, consistency also means that you, like I mentioned, you can practice your deployments. Okay? Same tools, same results, no matter which environment you're deploying to. Okay, now on Platform SH, this is how it works, and this is how we get you there. First, you have a build phase. You Git push, which is, of course, the first thing that you do, which I mentioned, and we, in Platform, then assemble containers. These are LXC containers. These are Linux containers that spring up really fast, really lightweight, really robust, very secure, and they grab all the dependencies for all the services that you've asked for in all of those containers. We grab the images of all of those services that you need. We run your build flavor commands, which in this the example was Composer, but it could be npm, it could be pip, which is Python. We run your build hooks, and this is your chance as a developer to do more with your code than just Composer install or npm install or run Maven or whatever. It gives you the chance to put things in their place, go patch stuff, get the extra little things that you need. Anything that you can't do with your build tool, you can actually just script against. And the whole point of the build phase is to get a block of code that is exactly how you want your application to run so that it can be frozen in time as a successful build and held as a physical object that can never be changed. Okay, we get through that, we freeze the application container, meaning your web application stops accepting requests because there's a critical moment in web application deployment where you might change the database schema and where the code might be out of synchronization with the infrastructure and the data. And what we do is really kind of sneaky. We take those incoming requests We hold them in a basket up in the cloud. It's really like a basket in the cloud. It's called a load balancer, and the load balancer keeps those requests alive while we do some really important stuff in the deploy phase. The deploy phase means we hold the requests, we unmount the current containers and throw them away, don't need them anymore. We mount file systems that you've specified, the ones that you had before, so that your persistent data exists. We expose the services, the MySQL, the Redis, the Solr that you've specified you need. And then you get a magical moment as a developer to run a deploy hook. The deploy hook is really useful for doing things like clearing cache, importing product data, or updating your database schema. And these are those moments in the web application lifecycle that I was mentioning where it's critical that your application code and your application data actually match each other. So we don't want any requests coming in at that moment while you're doing those things, but as soon as you're done, the load balancer dumps the basket of requests, and here they come. The customers don't experience any downtime. You've done an application release, a deployment, and you get two distinct points in the build phase and in the deploy phase to take actions that you specify as a developer. And that's the consistent part. So we've gone through orchestrated, where we set it all up. We've gone through consistent to make sure it's the same every time. Now I want to talk about deterministic. So for every event, there exist conditions that could cause no other event. Okay, I thought it was really cool when I learned about the Pythagorean theorem and gravity and all of that. You could say that if I threw this out into the room and there was no ceiling and there was no oxygen, and you know, no air to create resistance, no breezes and like nobody intercepts it, that I could predict exactly where it was going to land and when it was going to land just based on the gravity that was affecting it. That it was like deterministic. Like as soon as I've given a vector, a force vector, then you know exactly when and where it's going to land. So precisely that we land machines on comets that are speeding around our galaxy. That's just brilliant. And that's determinism for you. So for every event, there exist conditions that could cause no other event. You want your deployments to be as deterministic as the Pythagorean theorem, determining where an object hurtling through space in a vacuum is going to land. Right. In web application speak, what does that mean? That means that for every git hash, and let me clarify what that means. If I commit something to Git, I create a unique state in my Git repository, which is tracked by a hash. So basically, the hash identifies the state of the code that I've got in my repository. So we've got a Git hash on this side. For every Git hash, the application code and infrastructure should be deployed the same every time, no matter what environment I'm on. How do we do that? Okay, that's a really big goal and really hard to achieve, but we've achieved that. We do that by, like I said, assembling the code during a build phase from the Git hash. And after you've done that, whether you use any of these things like RubyGems, Maven, Ant, whatever, and after you've run your build scripts like Compass Compile, which you know will do CSS assets and maybe minify some images and uglify your JavaScript, whatever you do, then we basically burn a CD-ROM. Okay. It's the logical thing to do, right? In 2016. And we take the CD-ROM and we stick it into the hard drive of your computer and you run your code from there. Well, that's literally what we do, only without the physical CD-ROM. So we use a technology called SquashFS, which was used in writing CD-ROMs, and we pack your code onto a read-only file system. Okay? And we map that to a Git hash. That means if I push one Git hash to my development branch, and then I use that same Git hash through merge or Git push to another branch, like staging. I can call it anything I want, but let's call it staging for testing the code with my customers looking, okay? Then I will use exactly the same SquashFS file system for the code as I used before. It's deterministic. It can only deploy that code. There is no other code that can be deployed. No hacker can hack in. No root level admin can change a single thing. It is forever locked in, and that's really important. I'll tell you why. On Monday, I'm going to deploy some code onto my feature branch, okay? I'm building that Elasticsearch feature for our shop. It's going to go out. It's going to get all the software in the world from Composer, NPM, Pip, Maven, wherever, put it locally. I'm going to run some Compass stuff. I'm going to move some directories. I'm going to delete some stuff. On Friday, I want to deploy that. What's happened from Monday to Friday? All the software in the world has gotten updates. All the software in the world has had bug fixes, new releases, new point releases. And depending on how I've used the star character in my Composer files, then I would be liable to getting new code on Friday that I didn't have available on Monday, which is not consistent. So what I really want in an application web application cycle is to have a Git hash that forever maps to exactly one build. And as long as I push that Git hash to any environment, it will use exactly that build no matter what's happened anywhere else in the world in that time. And I, as a deployment manager, know that when I deploy, it's going to be consistent. Very important. So this determinism in the code, that's easy, that's clear. The determinism in the infrastructure, however, is less clear. So it's pretty obvious that you want the same services in the same configuration on every environment that you deploy: local, dev, staging, testing, UIT, production, et cetera, et cetera. It's less obvious, though, that you want to be able to roll back. The same way that you'd roll back your code if you made a mistake in coding and you wanted to just go back to how it was just before you deployed, you want to be able to do that with your infrastructure too. And using a deterministic deployment, you can. If we revert the code, since the code actually determines the infrastructure precisely, then you can revert the code and the infrastructure in one go. I mean, just imagine all that infrastructure that they lost in that first video when that crane fell into the harbor. Wouldn't they love to do Git revert and whew, there it is back again? You can do that with your web application, and believe me, some of the web applications that we build are more valuable than that boat and that crane. They're more expensive and touch more people's lives and are sometimes parts of critical infrastructure that make our modern world run. So it's really nice that you can revert the infrastructure if it goes wrong. And you can repeat these actions over and over again, back and forth if you have to, until you get it right. An OCD deployment is, however, not a MySQL dump and a MySQL import or any other type of database dump and import. That has, first of all, too much time involved. In a MySQL database dump and import, that's 50 or 100 gigabytes, we're talking hours and hours of time. Almost no way around that. If you just use the normal tools to do that, then you're a lost cause. Everything in your world as a web application has changed in the time that it takes you to dump and re-import the database. If you're using rsync for files, also not deterministic. And if you have to do things like re-index your search or rewarm your caches, also not deterministic. What you really want are file system level technologies that allow you to do exact moment in time snapshots of your entire data across all of your applications, across all of your services in one frozen moment that is consistent with itself, and deterministically make sure that that moment of time can be deployed onto another branch, another copy of the infrastructure, very quickly, so that when I want to reproduce a problem that I'm seeing in production, I know that I'm testing that problem on the same data and infrastructure that I'm seeing in production, so I don't run around in circles either seeing it or not seeing it based on the small differences in either data or infrastructure. So that's the framework of orchestrated, consistent, and deterministic. What are the benefits that I get from doing something that cool and that crazy? Well, fine, you know, it's simple to execute. As a developer, I've got one methodology for deploying, and I can use that on every environment that I deploy to, and that's Git push. It's testable. I can test my deployment prior to actually doing my deployment, and it's such low cost to me that I can test it frequently. How many of you used Subversion or CVS back in the day? Okay, I imagine that all the people on channel 9 are raising their hands. In the room here, literally nobody raised their hand. That means either you're not web application developers, or you're so young, which, congratulations, that you just never knew a world that didn't have Git in it. That's great for you too. It used to be that if I used Subversion or CVS, which are code revision tools, and I wanted to branch, it would take so long and take up so much space on my hard drive and so many CPU cycles that I would literally go play some foosball with my colleagues while I was making a branch. And I'd come back to see if it even worked if the internet didn't time out while it was happening. I remember those days. Git, the revision control tool that is, you know, the default standard throughout much of the world, reduced the cost of branching so much that it was both cheap and fast that I could branch 10 times an hour for different ideas that I've got, different ways that I'm taking the code, different things that I want to work on that I need to keep separate a little bit and merge them later if they work together. It reduced the cost of branching so much that everybody branches all the time. Okay, you can just see that by looking at GitHub or Bitbucket public repositories, and you just see loads of branches. Everybody who has an idea can branch it, fork it, branch it, and then make a merge request whenever they've got, when they want to bring that idea back into the mainstream. This technology reduces the cost of deployment of infrastructure and data to the same cost of making a Git branch. It's literally making a Git branch, and that duplicates your infrastructure and your data. So it's testable, it's repeatable, and because Git can be reversed, Git revert, then the infrastructure and deployment can also be reversed. Because if you spend a lot of time building something really big, really complicated, really expensive, and really important to a lot of people, not the least of which are you, your employees, and your customers, when you go to deploy that, it's going to be such a great feeling when it goes without any problems at all. So that's the end of the slides of the presentation. Now I'd like to take you through some live software examples that show what I'm talking about. So now we pray to the internet gods to make sure that I have a good internet connection. But that, granted that, I think everything should go fine. And I'm going to switch from the slides here over to the browser, where I'm going to show you an example Platform SH project. And hopefully that's legible for everybody, more or less. What do we got here? So over on the left here, I've got a list of all of the branches that I have. Now, based on what I just told you, you also know that every branch is a live running environment with all of the services and all of the application data. So let's take a look at the application that I've got. This is an easy platform application. So there it is. And they just give some information. It's they've got some top stories. Basically, I'm just showing this to you so that you can see that this application has actual real application data, okay? And this is easy platform. Now, what I've done here is I've created multiple copies, and I've done it in a hierarchy. Each one of these is a Git branch. Each one of these can be accessed by one or more developers, and each one is a full copy of the application. Let's take a look at the sprint branch, for example. The idea here is that my team is doing an agile sprint, okay, 2 or 3 weeks long. They've got a backlog in Jira. They've got some tickets they want to work through, some features. And we make a sprint branch, which is its own identical copy of the application as it is in that moment in time. Okay, it's got its own URL. I can either hide that from my customer or I can share it with my customer for them to watch along as I'm building things. And for every Jira story that I have in the backlog, we've gone and made new copies of the application to represent the development on that feature. And for every one of these copies, developers can come along and participate and collaborate on that branch, push their changes to that branch, test the feature on that branch with the copy of the application in real time, with notifications on the development coming here in the center, and when I'm ready, I can just send the link to the stakeholders and or the customer for them to see it before I merge it into the sprint. The sprint branch will be the copy of the application that collects all of the feature development from all of the branches, and I can see the development of the entire sprint shaping up there. Depending on how you do Agile, maybe you have a sprint demo at the end where you show the stakeholders that represent the customer or the different people, where you show them the features that you've done, and you close your JIRA tickets, and then you might merge that into the staging branch. The staging branch could very well be the branch where you run your CI tests or your acceptance tests, or where the customer does final sign-off on it. And from there, the stage is a direct child of the master branch. The master branch is the production live running environment. With one button, I can go into production in that live master branch, and it's the same process that I've used when I went from Story 6 to Sprint 13, from Sprint 13 to Stage, and finally from Stage into Master. And best of all, this workflow is just a product of my imagination. You can make any workflow that you want. It can fit your workflow exactly however you work now. Platform SH can be made to work like you do. As long as you use Git, it's 100% compatible. When I want to add a new developer to this project, you can see that the Git branch hierarchy that I've used to create my workflow is also reproduced here so that I could add somebody to, say, the sprint branch as a developer, but they wouldn't have the permission or access to any of the branches up the workflow, which are maybe the ones where I want my release manager to have the controls. This is great for teams that are distributed or who have different separations of concerns, such as a front-end team versus a back-end team, or an in-house team versus external teams. I can literally take a group of Romanian or Ukrainian developers, let's say a room full of 20, and onboard them onto a new project in an hour so that all of them have a complete copy of the entire application with all of the sanitized data and all of the services exactly like in production, ready to develop. That usually takes a massive effort just onboarding new developers. With Platform SH, that can be done extremely quickly. Okay, what else do I have? Just as a way of tour, if you have this many environments, that means your application is running in different contexts, okay? Different top-level URLs or host names. That means that you have a bit of a problem. And I could typify that problem by putting you into the mind of e-commerce and thinking about payment gateways. As an e-commerce merchant, you always want a payment gateway so that you can get the money for the products that you're selling. But since you have multiple copies of your e-commerce shop, you don't want to have multiple connections to the payment gateway. Yet you need to test the payment gateway to make sure that you can actually complete cart transactions. Payment gateways usually give you a live payment gateway and a sandbox payment gateway. And when you have this many copies of the application, you want something called environmental variables to control which payment gateway you're actually connecting to. And Platform gives you a concept for that that's called variables. And if I configure this environment, for example, you can see in a previous demonstration, I've already made an environmental variable that's called PayPal key, which is super secret. And that's the way it should be. And my developers who are less privileged and outsourced and junior should not have access to those credentials because I don't trust them enough and because it's against the principle of you only get the information that you need to know. So what Platform does is it injects this information into the running application at runtime through this tool, and therefore you don't need to store the super secret PayPal key in your Git repository. Git repositories, as great as they are so easy to copy that they tend to develop legs. Okay, they run away with stolen laptops, and they're easy to put on an SD drive and walk away with. So you really want your super secret information to be injected at runtime, and you want to be able to manage that with a permissioned system, which is exactly what Platform SH gives you. When I go, though, to the staging environment, what you see is that variable is here, and it's been overridden, and it's the not-so-secret PayPal key, which in fact will connect you to the sandbox. And that gives you the distinct ability to segregate the environmental variables based on user permissions, and the developer only has to know, hey, I need the PayPal key, and it's going to connect to the right thing at the right time, no matter where the application is running. Okay? There are a couple other things that I could show you here, but I want to focus on something equally important to all of that, and that is the developer experience. So I need to make this a little bit bigger so people can see it. We have a tool called Platform, which, if I show you the platform list, if I show you the list of commands that you have, you can easily imagine that it's quite a powerful tool. It's meant to facilitate not only your local development, that's the development of the application on the local laptop, but also your complete administration of your platform environments, including your production environment, which means that this is great for putting into Bamboo, Jenkins, Rundeck, whatever you're using for automation. It means that whatever platform does it via API. Platform is an API-first tool. And you can do all sorts of cool things. You can create new platforms. You can branch and merge your environments and back them up and restore those backups and manage those variables that I just said. You can add your SSH keys. You can synchronize the data between environments. You can add integrations to things like GitHub or Bitbucket so that when you do a merge request or a pull request on GitHub, it automatically mirrors on platform. Imagine how cool that is. I can show you that. Imagine how cool that is if, like we do, if you do a project that you're running on GitHub or Bitbucket, and you've got somebody who makes a pull request. Okay. For every pull request, of course, you might have some continuous integration going on. And if I show all of the checks here on this pull request, this merge request that somebody's opened up on our documentation, then what you can see here is that this has been deployed on a platform SH environment. Okay, this is really cool. You've got this application. People come along, any developer in your team, or if it's a public application from the public, they make a merge request to try to change something, and by default, it deploys that change, and here's our documentation with that change, and that's the diagram I just showed you, so that when I'm reviewing that merge request on GitHub, I can also review that change in the running application on that branch. When that merge request gets merged into the mainstream branch, then this environment will go away. It's completely self-managed, self-automated, and I've got this really great combination of GitHub plus merge requests, so I can do my code review very quickly and effortlessly. I can do some other stuff with this. I can do my user management, etc. But one really, really cool thing that's super important for local development is this. Okay, so I'm going to go into the easy platform on platform SH example that I just showed you, and I'm going to say platform tunnel open. Who knows what a tunnel is in SSH terms? So a tunnel is a connection from my local machine to a service that's someplace else. So it's asking me if I want to open these tunnels, and I've just done that. So I'm going to say platform tunnel list to see them. And it's made two tunnels for this application. This application, the one that I showed you, the Easy Publish, the Easy Platform application, has two services. It's got a database, MySQL, and a Redis server. I now have local on my machine connections to those that I can use in my application development so that I don't have to set up Redis or MySQL on my local machine in order to do my local development. This is an extreme time saver for developers, especially those that have to either do lots of small fixes or change their context very quickly. For a support team, it's invaluable. Imagine that your customer calls and says, hey, I've got a problem on the website. Support team says, no problem, let's go take a look. You instantly make a clone of the production website into a carbon copy of the infrastructure with all of the data and all the services byte by byte copied exactly the same, so it's easy to reproduce the problem. I make tunnels, I check out the code with Git, I build it I make tunnels with the local tunnel machine that I just showed you, and then I can test on that remote branch all of the code changes and all of the investigations that I need to make to understand and fix the problem. I can show my customer the fix to the problem on the copy that I that I made and say, hey, I just fixed that problem. It's live on this branch that I made. Are you comfortable with me merging that into production? Yes, go ahead. 2 minutes later, you've deployed that fix. I don't have to export data. I don't have to set up my servers and worry about having the same versions or anything like that. I don't have to grab a Docker image from anywhere. Nothing. I check out code, which takes seconds. I use the tunnel command to open connections to the actual services in the cloud. It takes seconds. I'm debugging, writing new code, fixing the problem in minutes, and I've got to fix as fast as I can do my debugging. Maybe that goes really quick. Maybe it takes a long time. Who knows? But then I'm ready to deploy, and I know that my deployment is going to go exactly the way that it should because I've practiced making that deployment many, many times before. Okay, so that is the sum total of my presentation. That's probably good enough for the live streaming. If the live streaming gods are out there listening, you can go to the interviews in the hall. But we have 9 minutes left on the clock in case any of you have any questions for me about OCD deployment, about Platform SH, or about us deploying into the Microsoft Azure cloud. Any questions? Well, then, I applaud you for coming to my session. Thank you very much. If you think of a question or you're too shy to ask, then I'm going to pack up and hang out right in front of the door here for a few minutes so you can come to me there. Thank you very much.